Should we start with the commissions, maybe?
Yeah, it's first in the document here. Why not?
So we've lost it, but we have the SFIM, right?
And we modified that last year? Last year, significantly, and I'm trying to remember how. Let me look that up.
So what was it? The S was
surprise. We removed one of the letters.
Surprise. I think we removed fun, S-I-F. Or we deprecated it.
Surprise, you get a plus one or plus two for how...
Oh, it's whether the media is good or not. Yeah, we took out how intrinsically good the media was by our rights.
There you go. That's what we got.
So we won the five. It's won the five on interest and fun, and then we have a plus one or plus two modify by our. Okay, yeah. Because as you know, it got out of hand when the media quality and surprise.
Yeah,
that was almost the most important thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, sand pebbles.
Yeah.
I had never even heard of this film until the commissioner had commissioned it.
Same here, and I liked it.
And but it's a Steve McQueen film. So if you told me, "Oh, hey, Steve McQueen war film is actually pretty good," I'd say it's like a plus one for me on surprise.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. It's not all right. Blown away, but.
Interest. How interesting was the resulting podcast? We did get the we did get the craziest feedback of all time just recently. Like, this podcast came out almost a year ago, right? And then just recently, in the last couple of weeks, we got just an intense piece of feedback from someone who is an old school fan of the book and the movie, and just took us to task.
Mm-hmm.
Was the movie good? Was our podcast good?
Boy, I don't really remember. I know the feeling I had going into it was like, I'm just not qualified to talk about this movie.
Right.
A, it's a super old movie. Yeah. B, it's on a subject I know very little to nothing about.
It's detailed. It's heavy. It's weighty.
Yeah. And I also felt like I didn't totally get what the movie was putting down. That was the other part. I think came into there like questioning a couple things. I'm like, that feels important, but I don't think I quite understand it. So I'm going to say the podcast wasn't all that interesting, especially if you're really interested in this movie.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like one of those things where a shallow first-time engagement probably disservices the movie, you know?
Right.
So I think, but I also don't think it was terrible. Like, I thought it was, and I think that if I recall correctly, I got, like, what they're going for a little bit more than you, maybe, because it was parallel to something else I was reading or thinking about. But I'm thinking, like, a middle-of-the-road three, because it wasn't bad, it wasn't uninteresting, it wasn't boring. It's an extraordinarily, maybe even 3.5.
Oh, 3.5 is pretty strong.
Out of 5?
Yeah. I'm more of a 3 on this one.
All right. I can go with a 3. And fun, like...
There were some fun parts. I remember...
Was there? Anything fun? Because I'm thinking, like, 2.
Yeah, like the fight. I remember that fight scene in that bar being pretty ridiculous. And us talking about that and having fun with that, but... And talking about, I don't know, the boat that mangles you and chews you up.
Yeah, the engineering on this was all really fascinating. Like, I remember him, like you know, the routine of him, like, tuning up the engine. It's like, this is an engine you can walk into and frequently do. You just, like,
yeah, and you might
time
be killed
the pistons,
when you do.
Right, and you might get killed. You might get compressed and incinerated, but you can do it. But that's not fun. That's more of the... That's where I'm like... That's like it's a 3.5. Because I remember the engineering stuff was really interesting. And the politics of the... You know, the kind of coolie culture. And how the servicemen felt about that. And how... I thought that was...
Yeah. I mean, okay. Maybe we need a 3.5 on interesting. And yeah, fun. Fun is fairly low on this one. I don't...
I think it's a two.
I don't think it stacks up against others in this list. Yeah. Ooh.
All right.
It's a rough one.
Hold on 1 second.
We've got a meager 6.5.
All right.
A meager 6.5.
Oops. Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
Oh, yeah. I was surprised by how much I liked this show, given a couple of things. A, it's basically a rom-com, and B, it's a musical series. I had a lot of fun with this. I really enjoyed the show. So I would say it's at the very least a one, but if you want to shade it to two on surprise level, I absolutely could go there.
I'm trying to think. Bald move. Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. I think you like this more than I did, which I was extraordinarily surprised by, because if you look at the subject material and the, you know, the musical framing. Huh. Yeah, man, this is a tough one. Surprise. Again, I never heard of this show because it was like this is a WB kind of thing, right?
I think so. Yeah.
I can't give it a plus two because I didn't love it. I didn't love it.
Okay.
But I'll go with a plus one.
Yeah, go with a one there.
And I did. Okay, so interest level.
Might suffer here.
Yeah, I don't know if it's below a three, because I think you have to have like pretty firm memories of like it being crappy to degrade it more than that. So I'm thinking three.
Yeah, it wasn't completely uninteresting, but boy, how fun was the podcast itself? Because a show is fun, but oftentimes if the show is fun, the podcast is not that much fun. Because especially with the comedy, because it's like, oh, it was funny when this happened. That's not a good podcast.
Yeah.
So
we watched, what, three episodes of this?
Mm-hmm.
God, what was there? It was one episode that I thought I remember standing out more than another.
There was one where they did a big dance number around, like, maybe a wedding.
Yeah.
I remember you really liked that one, and I didn't care for that one nearly as much.
Yeah.
I was more about the wordplay. You were more about the dancing, the foot play.
The singing and dancing, the foot play. Oh, no. Yeah. I will not own that. I think 3.5? 4?
On fun? I was going to go 3, so we can split the difference at 3.5.
Okay.
Yeah, kind of right down the middle.
The Karate Kid Part 3. Oh, my God. So, lack of surprise on this.
Yeah, this is not really a surprise.
Interest, I mean,
that's pretty low.
Is it interesting that a 35-year-old Ralph Macchio is trying to pick up a 17-year-old actress? I don't know. Like, I think we uncovered all of the, the IMDb trivia I thought was pretty interesting.
Sure. They used that Ralph Macchio still has this car. He was gifted by the studio, or was it Pat Morita? One of them.
It was his sole payment.
Yeah,
for the entire trilogy.
But fun.
Yeah.
Oh, interest.
So we're on interest. Yeah. So is that 3.5? Because again, interest in my mind is like, The way I think of it is like, did I learn something new or come around with a new way to look at things? Or did it really foster like an intense conversation? From that, I'm thinking this is closer to 3 than 5 territory.
Me too.
But fortunately, I think this is an easy 5 on fun.
This was a lot of fun. God, I still remember the journey to the tree, the insanity around like him going into this pit. to get this stupid tree that he broke. Yeah, it's
my struggle not to break out an offensive accent every time I wanted to quote Mr. Miyagi.
Yeah. Oh yeah, this is a fun one.
Yeah, I think that's pretty good. So too bad about the surprise.
Yeah.
Are we adding these up as we go? So we had a 7.5 for Crazy Ex-Girlfriends,
cool,
and
8 for Karate Kid in the lead.
Cool,
so far.
8 for Karate Kid. Dead Poet Society.
Yeah. So I don't know if this can be a surprise because I've constantly heard how good Dead Poet Society is.
Right.
So I feel like it gets a 0 on surprise. Although I was happy to see that it held up to its reputation.
I was going to say, can we give it a surprise that it does kind of hold up as well as it does? Like that this does speak, like I was kind of mildly surprised that this show from like what, the 80s still kind of like speaks to my inner honor student.
I mean, then, like, if we want to cheat it a little, I'm kind of okay with that because I thought this was a very good movie.
Well, I did too, but like, I guess you can't. Like,
we lost media quality. I feel like this is kind of an all-in-one surprise.
All right. So surprise 0, because we're both familiar with it. We both familiar with its reputation for being good, and it was good. Interest, I think, is high.
Me too.
There's a lot of discussion about, I can't remember exactly what it is, but I remember like thinking about this film in the lens of my parents' reaction to it, because it's one of the first things I remember my mom and dad debating about, you know, because wasn't it like, and man, it's already, I've kind of forgotten about it, but like I thought that the kid who commits suicide over not being able to participate in the play was just gay. Like, it's just matter of fact, he's gay. And I remember my mom and my dad had a real debate about it. And seeing it as a person, it's like, I expected him to be just like super coded gay.
Right.
And my dad just to be obtuse. But like, I don't know. I thought that was, there's some of the discoveries around the margins of this show I thought was interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm certainly no English professor. I'm not steeped in the history of literature or anything, or poetry especially, but like I felt like we did a fairly interesting podcast and engaging, just talking about the movie itself, not necessarily its subject.
Would you say that this is the anti holdovers? Where like
nothing turns out well.
Well, so I was thinking that, like, in this movie, like, this was a more thrilling experience, like, empowering throughout the whole thing, but it ends in a big bummer because one kid dies and the beloved student is driven in shame and scandal from his position, whereas a holdover starts, like, bleak and very de-empowering. Like, it's just a suck-ass situation, but it turns out better. Like, everyone kind of learns and improves and grows.
Yeah, there's an inverse kind of thing happening there.
Are we going 4, 5, or somewhere in between? I have a hard time pegging it at 5.
Yeah, maybe in between. I do like a 4.5 on this.
Like, Primer is like one of my touchstones for like a 5 out of 5. Donnie Darko, things like that. 4.5.
Yeah, 4.5. Why not?
Wow.
Feel like it got ripped off in the surprise department a little, but
yeah.
So we'll cheat at the 4.5.
We're going to juke the system to get the answer that we want.
Yes.
And then ultimately reject it with a subjective seat of your pants. That's what we do. Fun. I think this is with the Robin Williams of everything, which is also kind of a downer too.
Yeah.
I remember this podcast being fun, but not like Karate Kid,
no,
Goonies,
no.
Breaking Bad, or not Breaking Bad. Not amongst the funniest of all times,
or even a couple others on this list, honestly.
Okay, so you want to go like 4, 3.5? Because it also has a lot of heavy stuff that was hot, you know, heavy going to talk around.
Let's do a 3.5. That feels right to me. Slightly more fun than an average podcast.
So we're back up to 8. We're tied with Karate Kid Part 3. Oh boy, Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban.
There's no surprises here, right? It's exactly what we thought. Both thought it was going to be for each of us.
The only surprise it would have been is if you had been like, you know what? I was actually kind of blown away. This is not what Harry Potter I thought it was going to be, and I'm eager to finish the rest of the series. Like, that's kind of where I was somewhat hoping we would get to.
I will say,
I think that would be very good for Bald Move, but Jim stubbornly refuses to bend to the whims of the industry.
I think the movies actually got a really good structure to it, and the plot of the movie itself is quite good. Mm-hmm. Like that whole time travel, like five minute gap or whatever window they've got going there. That stuff actually worked really well. It's just the flavor of it, you know. I just don't care for this flavor. It's
magical,
like
kids,
a onion soup. It's like, okay, I understand why people might like onion soup. I just don't.
You don't like French onion soup even?
I've not tried French onion soup, honestly. I've never had onion soup. It was just the first thing that popped in my head.
Okay. Okay, so interest.
Interesting. Boy. Is this interesting? I mean, you had a lot of... So I think like stories of, you know, your experience with the movies and our just kind of discussion of why I don't like it or my experience with it. And I think some of that stuff is interesting to audience members who want to know more about us.
I certainly, this was a revelatory about the host type of commission podcast, which is, it's not interesting to us because but
we've lived it.
From the outside, sure. Mm-hmm. I thought I was pretty treasure trovey in terms of like behind the scenes kind of details and sort of like it's stuff I've soaked up over many, many watches. I say this as I'm about like every year in Christmas, I start a rewatch of the Riff Tracks versions of these movies. And this weekend, I just started the final one, number 8. So, I don't know. I'm thinking like 4, maybe.
Yeah, I can get behind that.
What do you think about the fun? I have a hard time because I thought it was really fun because, this is something my heart has wanted for a long time. To get you to get an honest go of it. And I had fun discussing it with you. But was it actually fun? Was it super fun? I can't remember. Just like so many funny things about Harry Potter, but I don't know if any of that got to it.
I mean, I remember having some of the fun I had was just asking questions about like, why is this thing this way? And like, some of those scenes, I mean, they're bizarre. The family stuff, the bus driver stuff. Some of those things I don't know about, but
the first 10 or 15 minutes is very much like the early goings of Fellowship of the Ring, where you can feel the series bending from its childhood roots more to the darkness to come. That bus stop is largely a remnant of those days where it's like, oh, look, I got a candy with a chocolate frog and a man.
I think there was a lot of fun to be had if you're a Jim and Aaron fan who had heard, you know, how much I don't like Harry Potter, to hear us.
Oh, the anticipation of this. Yeah.
And
but
I
my touchstones for this is Goonies, Back to the Future, Independence Day. Like, we've had some fun. Like, it is like
Willy
you
Wonka.
Know, it's a party on fucking wheels. Willy Wonka. Like, it's not that. I can't, like.
No.
Even 4 seems a bit generous, but I feel like we're giving half points on both of these for the community's experience with it more than our own, but I'm fine with that. I feel like that's probably what the community wants out of a Baldies. It's not just us, right?
Sure. All right.
Okay.
We're gonna have a dead tie here at 8 for a lot of these.
We'll be right back with more Bald Move after this brief pause. Here's what's new in premium content for our club members.
This Tuesday, we're back off the clock with a new premium podcast covering our experiences with the new Amazon series Fallout, Alex Garland's Civil War, as well as some thoughts on X-Men 97.
Then on Friday, The Old Reliable, Lunch with Jim and Aaron. Join us in the Munch Crowd to watch us record live at 1 p.m. Eastern or check out the podcast later that day.
If you want more Bald Move in your life, head over to support.baldmove.com to find out how you can get tons of bonus audio and video content, plus ad-free feeds.
Since the dawn of time, we've been putting clothes on our back that identify us with our people, our group, our tribe.
And while Bald Move might be one of the smallest, weirdest tribes out there, transcending all concepts of border, class, culture, and creed, we still have respect for the old ways.
At support.baldmove.com, you can get t-shirts, hats, mugs, and more. We have something for every one of our podcasts, or just wear the four pips of the Bald Move logo with pride.
Bald Move merch beats running around naked, and they make a great gift for the Bald Move fan in your life. Join our tribe! Head over to support.baldmove.com and click on merch to start shopping. And now, back with more Bald Move.
Stop or my mom will shoot.
I don't really think this is a surprise.
Dr. DeVito, I believe, pulled the trigger on this. Yeah, I mean, I saw this as a kid, and I knew it was just utter garbage. I don't think you'd ever seen it, but its reputation is it's garbage. Like, were you aware of the Arnold Schwarzenegger story?
No, I was not.
Okay, because I was kind of sort of famous in badass circles, so it's like if you'd even heard that, it's like, well, it just gives it away. Like, this is just a turd movie.
Yeah.
That's almost a, like, this movie is... You didn't listen to it. This movie is essentially a practical joke to Arnold Schwarzenegger played on Sly Stallone.
Yeah, tricked him into accepting this job.
They were obviously going out for the same types of movies. You know, if you want to do Predator and you're looking at who to cast, there's like three or four guys. These two are always going to get it. And they had this intense competition over body counts, over testosterone, over bicep. And Arnold's floated the idea that he is hot to make this script, that he's got to make this movie, that it's going to take his career into, and Sly jumped in there and said, fuck no, I'm taking this movie.
and then they made the movie you see.
And it's just terrible. It's objectively bad in every way. But because of that, it's kind of it doesn't quite make it wrap around to good. It's not like that's so bad it's good, but
there are moments. I do like old fucking
Estelle Getty,
whatever
her
name is. Yeah, Estelle. toting that huge gun around, just like being an action hero. And she's kind of badass every once in a while, but it doesn't save the movie.
Yeah.
Anyway, as far as surprise, I think it's a zero because we knew about this thing.
Yep. Surprise zero. Interest. Like I said, I think if you had never heard of the Arnold Sly fiasco, that it was probably interesting. But again, this was a stunt. This was a stunt commission.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone kind of knew it.
I want to go.
Is it lower than a three?
No, I think like because of the Arnold Stallone stuff, it saves it from being lower than a three. I mean, it's a pretty standard like middle of the road podcast plus the Arnold Stallone of it.
Yeah.
So yeah, 3.5.
And then the fun. I think the fun was pretty high. It could have been higher if the movie was actually better at doing the things it was supposed to be doing, but
yeah.
Yeah, but man, I can't remember. I know there was definitely like some Stallone's wardrobe was insane in this movie too.
Yeah.
4.5? Maybe 4.
I thought there was something around the bad guys, the villains in this that were like really ridiculous. I can't remember. Yeah, 4 sounds good to me.
God, February 14th, so it's 1 year almost to the day that we covered this. Yeah, I'm just looking at Sly in this corduroy suit that he is just, he just looks miserable in this movie, man. Okay, let's move on to, so that's a 7.5. No threat to the leaders there. Indiana Jones' Last Crusade. Okay, surprise is -5.
Yeah, it's a 0, obviously.
This is just because, like, I have seen all of the behind the scenes footage of this. I think I even said it on the podcast that I watched the making of again to kind of like prep for this.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like there was a lot of that came out. And also, yeah, like, there's also, I think we did an overall discussion of how this fits into the overall series. And this was also in the lead up to Dial of Destiny. So we were really trying to kind of put everything into context. I think this is at least a 4, if not a 4.5, between the behind the scenes details, mm-hmm, the makings of, the retrospective, the Crystal Skull impact.
Yeah.
Eve of Dial Destiny.
I could go 4.5 on this. I don't remember a lot of this podcast is the crazy thing. I remember our Crystal Skull podcast a lot better than this one. And of course, yeah, our Raiders podcast, but yeah. That one.
And again, this is a fun podcast, but it doesn't quite get to Goonies, Back to the Future kind of territories for me.
So maybe the movie is more fun than the actual podcast because it's just so good. It's
And there wasn't like the Mia fun is like when we're able to like poke fun and enjoy things kind of deep, but I don't know. We did do that. Like, this is, I think I'm like, this is another one where it's like, I wouldn't say it's the best one, like with The Godfather. It's like Godfather 2 might be better than Godfather 1. However, Godfather 1 is my favorite.
Sure.
I think this is my favorite Indiana Jones. Like, obviously Raiders is better.
Mm-hmm.
But having said that, like, this is the one that I just love fucking watching over and over and over again.
Sure. Yeah.
So I don't know. Does that come out? Should that be a 4? Should that be worth a 4.5? It can't be 5 to me. Cannot be 5 to me.
Yeah, I'm with you. Yeah, it's 4.5 and see what happens.
Okay. 9 total for that. Okay, In Bruges.
9. All right. In Bruges, or however you say it. Surprise is high, real high for me on this. You've seen this before, though. It wasn't your first time seeing it. It was my first time.
I knew it was good. I was going to, like, it's one of those orders, like, some of them, like, I hope that Jim is, like, likes this, because I know it'll make a better podcast if we kind of, like, are more unified and get, but, like, this is one of those, like, if Jim comes in hating his podcast, like, I don't know how I'm going to get through, because this is a good fucking movie. So yeah, it's kind of a 0 for me. It's a 2. It's a +2 for you. For sure. So is that like a 1.5?
Can you even do a 0.5 on this system? It's either 1 or 2.
Why can't we?
I don't know. I mean, it's our system. We can make
Yeah. I know we've done fractional points before, but maybe it is bullshit.
Were you surprised at all how well it held up? How old is this movie?
That's the thing. You do have to contextualize this with the of its times. It has got a lot of offensive stuff. Oh, even yeah. Like
2008.
It's up there with yeah, I don't think I don't know. Some of it feels kind of cruel and mean-spirited too.
Oh yeah, at times. Like there were a lot of cringe moments in this where I'm like, I don't know if I approve of any of this.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's also very good, very well
made. And the
way
to fix it, is like, oh, we're going to have a whole bunch of unfortunate dwarf humor, but we'll make the dwarf a racist asshole. So right, he kind of deserves it.
Right. But then you're chasing the racism tale there, and it's like, ah, shit.
Right. And also, the way they end with the metaphor,
the kids mistaking the
having this guy be kind of the... Yeah, and the way the way that he is such that it makes the morality of that moment really sublime.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, if he was just like a completely uncontroversial person, you feel, but and if he was completely like despicable,
No, I think the movie is great. It was shocking to me how much the movie kept surprising me at every turn. Like, just when I thought I had figured it out, boom,
you know,
here's
what?
Another level to
There you go. There you go. Because even I had forgotten, you know, it'd been a while since I'd seen it. I forgot the exact way that Ralph Fiennes, you know, kind of fucks up at the end with that. And it's like, and it's, oh, you got, what's he say? It's like, you gotta have principles, or you gotta stand on your principles and...
something.
Spoilers. I don't want to, because if you haven't seen it yet, this was a particular fine movie and a pretty good commission. You know what, I think you talked me into the plus two for surprise, because even I was surprised at how good of a movie, because some of these movies, when I saw in my like very early stages of film appreciation, it's easy to impress me.
Yeah,
you know, you see, it's like, whole, you know, yeah, you see something with like a pretty clever twist or an ending you didn't see coming, and it just fucking blows you away. And it's like, well, you know, you're in another 20, 30 years, you see that happen 20, 30 times.
Mm-hmm.
But it was one of the first ones where I went to see like a rated R, kind of borderline. It's in the theaters, but it's kind of like more of an arty type of film.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Interest level. I thought this was a really... I remember being like, every once in a while you really get, you like something like you really sink your teeth into something and are in the mood to talk out like implications of things, and I felt like we were pretty simpatico, and it led to some really good conversations.
Yeah, I thought so too.
Almost five, but
yeah,
is this some kind of weird science chauvinism where I feel like you got to talk about black holes or singularities or
maybe, although
or
you know,
time travel before I give it the full five, or you have to have a searing expose about democracy and racism,
right,
and human traffic. It's like, it's gotta be something more than two foul mouthed gangsters having a bro moment in Bruges. Right.
And an existential bro moment. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, yeah. Does it say something about what you like? Absolutely. Yes. I am interested in the things I'm interested in. So sue me. And you know what? The audience is
the
situation. If not, they wouldn't be here. So.
Yeah. This movie's. I think 4.5 at the very least.
Yeah, I'm with you.
This might be the winner right here, buddy. And then fun.
It was pretty fun.
I also think this is a really fun podcast. There's like just like hilarious things. This is a very memeable movie. There's a bunch of like, you know, literal memes that come out of this. I think of Colin Farrell on the park bench with Gleason behind him. Like, you know, there's like this really intricately set up piece around this action, and it's like become a meme of, you know, you being your own worst enemy and your better impulses trying to it's pretty good stuff. Where do we put the fun factor? Because it's also a pretty bleak movie in a lot of ways too.
Who's that very problematic angry director who makes the weird existential movies? Because that's what this
David
movie,
O. Russell.
Yeah, that's what this movie felt like to me. It's not David O. Russell, right?
It isn't. I don't think so.
Okay.
No.
I wasn't sure if he made this, but that's what the movie felt like to me. Which it has like really interesting,
yeah, Martin McDonagh,
heady things to talk about, but also a lot of fun. I had a blast talking about this podcast, or this movie rather.
But there again, it's like I unless I'm like belly laughing, I can't quite get to five.
Yeah, if there are no actual real memes that come out of the podcast, it's obviously not a five, right?
Yeah. So four? I felt like this is much more interesting than it was funny. If we go with four, that easily puts us into, like, that's a 10.5. It's now got a commanding 1.5 lead.
Yeah, I think it would have been more, it would have been funnier if it wasn't so problematic. Like, there's a lot of humor in this movie, but most of it is
problematic. Very Tarantino like that way, where it's like, some of the offensiveness is intentional and he's doing something with it, but some of it is just, isn't this awesome? I'm getting away with doing this.
Sure. Maybe trying to shock a little bit .
Like, I can defend a lot of Tarantino stuff, but I always think in Kill Bill, or not in Kill Bill, in Pulp Fiction, dude wrote himself in to a scene so he could use the N-word or the hard R to Samuel L. Jackson. And that is just him being drunk and high off a white guy privilege, right?
I think so.
Like that dude's no that dude's that dude is free basing it.
All right. How about Nightmare Before Christmas? All right, here we go. Not a surprise for you. I know that you've seen this before,
I've seen a lot. I hadn't seen it until, this is one that I didn't watch until Cecily came around. So probably, almost certainly within the last 8 to 9 years. But I even remember as being kind of like, one of those things. Because I think I'd also seen it before and been like, whatever. Because I was a Jehovah's Witness and holiday movies. And this is like two holiday movies combined. And it's animated and it's weird. And
yeah.
But yeah, I was familiar with it. You had never seen it before.
Yeah, but obviously I'd heard it's great. I don't know. I can't go any higher than a one on this because of its reputation.
Okay. I won't fight you too hard on that. Interesting. There is some interesting behind the scenes stuff, and the idea that the thing that I walk away from every time is like, this is very weird that this is considered a Tim Burton film.
Oh yeah. With him hardly directing it. Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, I don't think he directed it at all. This is like if you fairly advertise this, I think it'd be for like, maybe you could say from the mind of the director of, whatever, Batman or whatever. But like,
yeah, this was Tim Burton trying to franchise Tim Burton.
Yeah. Yeah. And he isn't like, that's the thing. It's like, he isn't even the credit. I thought maybe he is. He's not the credited director, writer or anything. He just gets a story by it because he did Once Upon a Time when he worked at Disney, wrote a 2-page.
Yeah.
A Christmas theme poem about this Jack Skellington character, and like all the bones are there, but he essentially pitched like turned this entire concept over turnkey to a whole team, did a few basic like I kind of like this look, I like this feel, I like these color combinations, and that's it. But yeah, this is Tim Burton's A Nightmare for Christmas. It's Tim Burton's A Nightmare for Christmas. Yep. I thought that stuff is interesting.
I did too. I thought also discussing Jack Skellington, his sort of motivations and arc in this movie was fairly interesting, because I think we had a difference of opinion on that kind of.
Yeah.
I would say this is a fairly interesting podcast. I could go four on that.
And it was the 30th anniversary, and the commissioner graciously, they commissioned this like around, December of January of the year. And we were actually fairly caught up on things at that point. And we could have done this like in the spring or summer. And they're like, no, hold it off for the anniversary. Super cool. Super kind. Mm-hmm. I thought that was neat. I think the Hollywood insider stuff of it is what gives it, because everyone knows it's made by Tim Burton, it seemed like there's this huge power vacuum of actual credit. Like, you know, Danny Elfman thinks he should get this. The director thinks he should get that. The guy who did all the pre-production and production think and you know, the day-to-day, like, thinks he should. And then, like, Danny Elfman's girlfriend thinks she should get. It was... It is a really fascinating kind of thing to uncover. Four, I think, is fair. What about fun? That's the thing. It's like, this film is a lot more sincere than you would think on the face of it.
Sure.
So I actually think, I never think of this as like a funny, you know, lighthearted romp. Like, this is a fairly heavy kind of, you know,
yeah,
movie.
I remember some of the scenes that I liked, but does that translate to a fun podcast? Like, talking about Oogie Boogie or whatever his name is.
Oogie Boogie Man.
Yeah.
We did have a kind of funny riff about the doorway to the different holidays, where they implied the existence... I can't remember if they implied the existence, like, by having a shamrock, or we extrapolated, like, what is St. Patrick's Day land look like?
Oh, God. Right.
Where it's all just leprechauns and drinking.
Mm-hmm.
What is that? And I think there are some funny things about, like, the implications of certain holidays having certain doors. But that's the only one I can really think of that sticks out of my mind.
Yeah, maybe a 3 is warranted here.
Unfortunately, that adds up to just an 8 for A Nightmare Before Christmas. Enemy of the State. Had you seen this movie before?
Oh, yeah.
This was
a few times.
One that I saw in the theater, I remember, and I'm looking forward to it because, like, man, Will Smith was kind of, for a moment, my Harrison Ford there, where it's like, I just, like, man, I got so excited Will Smith was in something, because he was in all the good shit. He was in, like, an incredible run of Independence Day. Well, first you go back to, I loved his rap. I was like 8-9 years old when he was coming on to rap. I love that shit. He's like kid rap.
Mm-hmm.
Then he was a Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, which was a huge show in my childhood. Then he was just went on this tear of, like, Independence Day, Men in Black. I know there's
all
more.
The way up through,
I know there's a,
like,
lot more.
I Am Legend. That's when the Will Smith, like, bloom.
And he had
came
a few missteps, like Wild Wild West. I think was the first kind of, like, well, that was the first serious speed bumper. It's like, what the fuck?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he had the Will Smith was a bit of a legend there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's not a huge surprise, though, because both of us have seen it. I think it's probably a 0 in surprise. And I remembered it fairly well, too.
Okay. Interest.
I mean, how much talking do we do about surveillance state stuff? I feel like there was
quite a bit
of interesting talk around that.
Regina King being a top tier smoke show in this fucking, like,
is that interesting?
I don't know,
to some
but
people,
like,
I'm sure, yeah.
I don't know. There's something about, like, it's interesting when you see it's probably says something about objectification in a male gaze. But it's interesting when you see a woman in the context of, like, this is a serious actor who's, like, moting the hell out of things, and I've really invested. And then you go back 20 years ago, and she's just used as eye candy. She's just, like, in lingerie and, like, wearing a bikini and showing off her body to kind of be, like, yeah, to exclusively serve. It's kind of wild. Like, oh, wow. I would have never guessed that this serious dramatic actor could also be just incredibly incredibly sexual and hot. I don't know. If you want to talk about it, it's not super interesting.
It's the 90s, and you got to get your start somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. If it was 10 years ago in the 80s, it's probably it'd be a nude, cringy sex scene
to
some soft rock and saxophone and ugh. But also, it's a great kind of late middle age Gene Hackman role.
Yeah,
I thought that was, like, you know, Gene Hackman's a guy who, largely due to Bald Move, I've taken a lot more seriously in recent years. Like, he had a really fine career, and this was a good late career one of his.
Yeah, I knew him as, like, the Superman guy and the guy from Enemy of the State.
Yeah.
And like maybe Runaway Jury or whatever it's called. Is that what it's called? I don't know. The one with him and John Cusack. But yeah, I've really, my opinion of him has gone way up since I've watched things like, what's that spy?
Oh, The Conversation.
The Conversation, yeah. And a couple of others of his. How does that relate to Enemy of the State? I mean, I don't remember it being crazy interesting. But it,
other than the surveillance state stuff,
yeah, there had to be.
I know, like the whole Faraday cage. This was this movie was my introduction to that concept.
Yep.
Air,
me too.
Air gapping your defenses, your physical setup.
Yeah, maybe 3.5.
Also, was it super prescient? Like, is that something that like when we were watching this? Is this the movie where we realized that like all this stuff that was like so like almost conspiratorial, far fetched? It turns out, you know, I got a lot of complicated feelings about the Snowden leak and how it was handled and all that stuff. But like essentially, while this movie is being made, all this stuff was happening.
Yeah, I think this was the one where we talked about that.
And I think we had some pretty good. So like that's in the 4.5 territory for me, but I don't know. It might. Yeah.
Okay.
As far as fun,
yeah,
the only one I really remember is like just completely bagging on this cast of young men where you got Scott Conn, Jack Black, Seth Green,
right.
All an identical slick back gel,
blonde,
mega asshole.
Yeah.
Like these are like we talked about, like there's an era of Hollywood where hacking started to be like, you know, hacking went from nerds and poorly dressed, poorly groomed dorks, just nerds, people that you'd meet on Friday Night Magic you know, sessions at your local D&D shop or whatever.
Yeah.
To like somewhere in the Matrix, like they turned into like these trench coat wearing, trendy, attractive people. And I feel like this is one of the missing links in that, where it's like all the government hacker dudes were just bros, like douche bros.
Mm-hmm. Went from
that
like
super
sneakers
fun
to swordfish at some point.
Yes. Yes. Like sneakers, hackers, old school.
Mm-hmm.
Swordfish, Matrix, this movie, new school.
Yeah.
Shit, Jason Lee was one of the fuckers. Like, yeah, they had a whole crew of these. Barry Pepper. Jake Busey.
Oh, right.
All these guys with slick back asshole haircuts.
Uh-huh.
That was really funny. I don't know if it's worth even a 4, but it's more than your standard 3.
Sure, give it a 4. Why not?
4? Okay.
Give it a 3.5. Okay. Why not? It doesn't matter. It's not going to beat
8.5. Oh, no. We're giving away the stakes here. Okay. These next two are very interesting.
Yes. So, Afterlife, big
surprise. The first one.
Never even heard of it.
Yeah, and honestly, when I get commissions like this, I'm of two minds of it. There's a thrill of like, oh my God, I might get exposed to something great. And then there's also like, oh man, what if I hate this very niche-y thing that the commissioner has, you know. We got ways, like I said, there's always your money back guarantee. Like, I'll tell you up front. It's like, you know, I don't know. But this was also very highly regarded and rated. Like, this had a little bit of... So I was less worried about this one. But is the surprise a full 2?
I think so, because I found it to be a very good movie as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really made me think.
Almost like... Yeah, and like this feels like a little bit more of a lighthearted Japanese Terry Gilliam type of project where it's like a very bureaucratic and mundane look at something that's like fantastical, spiritual,
or like
lower
budget, less visually creative, What Dreams May Come kind of thing.
Yeah, it's a show that reflects on death. The whole idea is that the afterlife in this movie consists of you going to a place where a specialist that does these things works with you to make a film that reflects your best part, like, right, of your life.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're able to go the happiest, and you're able to go into the afterlife inhabiting that memory.
I guess not necessarily the moment you were happiest, but the moment you want to remember in your death.
Yeah. Which typically is people's happiest moments and all that stuff.
Sure.
And then there's, like, you know, what do you do if you're a dour businessman that never really got a chance to live and you got some regrets? And what if you are kind of maybe a bad, shitty person, or or at least you think that way? So I was
what
even
if you
knowing...
just can't choose? What if you don't give a shit? You don't give a shit enough to choose something, you know?
Yeah. You just, I'm not going to do, I'm dead. I ain't going to do your chores. I ain't going to do your homework assignment.
Yeah.
I
thought it was super interesting.
Like, I thought it was super interesting. Easily a 4.5.
Yeah, I might even
approaching
go to a five.
Here. Yeah, because we got really, and we're of an age where, like, this stuff is starting to hit. So,
and talking about the filmmaking itself, I thought was pretty interesting. You know, like, not
in
just,
our 40s and 50s.
Yeah,
oh, go ahead.
Not just what, you know, what it means, but also how it was made. I thought that was cool.
You think in our 40s and 50s, death is going to be as interesting as time travel?
Oh yeah, easily.
All right, so the rare five on interest. Fun, that's where definitely this movie kind of lags behind a bit.
Yeah.
I might even go down to, like, 2.5.
Yeah, there were some fun scenes, but I don't know that we made much fun of it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Yeah, I was like a lot more philosophical watching this rather than har. So
go with a two.
A two, okay.
Yeah, why not?
Fortunately, that is going to bury it for Baldy contention, probably.
I mean,
why can't I
get buried by
equal? So what is that? 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and then Ikiru.
Yeah. Classic Kurosawa. I was surprised because every time I hear Ikiru, I think, every time I hear Kurosawa, I think samurai movie. Yeah.
Right.
And this is not that. This is set.
Not at all.
What, in
this
the 40s?
Yeah, it's not quite contemporaneous, but it's like that's, yeah, it's,
yeah.
It's, this was supposed to speak to a modern audience in Japan. And,
I thought so too.
It was like the only reason that I wasn't more surprised is I saw a poster of it and it had a dude wearing a suit, and I'm like, oh well, this isn't set in the Edo period of Japan. This has got to be some kind of, yeah. So I was clued in that this was, and then Kurosawa, I don't think it's fair to characterize most of his movies as samurai films. It's just that's what all kind of got exported and was popularized here in the West, but.
It's what he's most.
It's like saying Martin
here.
Scorsese only makes gangster movies. Like
that's almost true, but yeah, there are a few that he does that aren't gangster movies.
But as you start looking at more and more of his work, it's less and less. Like I think at least a full third of his films have nothing to do with gangsters. Like you can say, like, you know, that one that we watched, it was like, what was it, the Parade of Innocence or End of Innocence? Age of Innocence, like. Yeah, that's, you know, if you want to say that's a gangster of love type of movie, or the, but it's, no, that's not a gangster movie.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't know. It was fairly surprising to me. But is it a surprise that this movie holds up? Although I have some complaints about the movie, but also I do think it's pretty good.
This is one of those movies where its age. Because it's like age, not in terms of like film, but like in terms of like technique, and some of the cultural barriers made it rougher going than, you know, I think it's like, I mean, this might be controversial, but like it's a lot easier to get into the Seven Samurai because, you know, we're just inherently more interested in these kind of like warrior monk guys, and you know, this that stuff really appeals to us, where you know, essentially existential Japanese post-World War II dread is not exactly something that we're as familiar with.
Is this like the Citizen Kane of Japan?
It's what it feels like, where it's like... Although I will say that that's the thing about Citizen Kane is I was surprised at how well that held up as a thoroughly modern movie.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a tough one, man. So do you want to give it a one for surprise, since I was surprised? And
no, I was surprised. I said, I mean, I think it's like, you know, I mean, just the fact that I saw the poster and realized it wasn't a samurai, like, I still think that...
Well, it has a reputation, right? Kurosawa himself has a reputation for excellence.
That's the thing. If you told me that, like, that's the thing. It's like, if you told me, if you said this random, hey, like, there's this thing that was made in 1959 about a Japanese businessman who's finds out he's going to die and is trying to figure out the meaning of life, I'd be like, probably hard pass. And if you told me, mm-hmm. well, Kurosawa did it, just like, you know, if you told me there is somebody wrote a story about the in the Victorian era, a guy having a very chaste relationship with a woman he couldn't. It's like, I mean, I don't know. That's not kind of, well, Martin Scorsese made it. Okay, I'm in. Like, Kurosawa instantly. Yeah. But do you penalize the podcast for surprise on that? Because I will say that this is also not the flavor Kurosawa that I've become accustomed to. Like, I will say that I've only seen a samurai shit.
Gotcha.
I've never seen one of his just like, you know, day in the life of type of movies.
Okay. So you're one.
So I'll go with a plus. I'll give you a plus. Yeah. Like, cause I think that's what we're trying to be is like, yeah, it's kind of like the familiarity of us to the movie, to the creator, surprise of whether it held up. You know, like, does it confirm our expectations or kind of shatter them? Boy, now the more, it's like, you could definitely argue for a plus one on this, I think, but...
Yeah, it's okay.
And if this was a samurai, if this was like, you know, Hidden Fortress or Throne of Blood...
Yeah, yeah. Or Ronin. Yeah, or, yeah, but, anything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I think the plus two is justified. Interesting. Here again... I think this is a very high interest podcast. Maybe it would get the five if, like, because I remember us talking about Afterlife.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if we hadn't seen these things within like 3-4 months of each other, I think it would be as even higher interest level. But I think this is an easy 4.5.
I think so too. Even the parts talking about the parts of the movie I didn't like, I found that pretty interesting from my perspective, but.
But the whole ending was bewildering to you, right? I remember.
So the jumping to after his death and like just spending so much time in that scene with those people, I think as we were talking it out, I eventually came around to, okay, I understand what they're doing here, what Kurosawa wants to make of this scene.
Right.
It's just maybe it doesn't quite work for me. And there's the fact that they show him... They show him dead at the beginning. What do they do at the very beginning? They say something like, "And I'm dead," or whatever.
They show you the tumor, right? They like show you that he'll got,
die
like,
of it in
going to kill him.
X amount of days, and then they show him going to the doctor and like confirming the tumor. And I'm like, we already know. You told us this. What do we need to do this redundant stuff for? I felt like that was all fairly interesting too. So,
yeah, and there's also like. In terms of interest level, like, I think The Seventh Seal is a very interesting movie, but, like, large swaths of it is just two dudes in black and white playing chess in front of a rear projected screen.
Yeah.
It's like, the conceptual interest can only take you so far, and it's like, well, you know, I'm also just looking at this just really old, primitive. There was a lot of, like, I remember noticing that, like, the very beginning of this movie is filmed very dull and in a very workmanlike fashion. But as the man kind of widens out, like the filmmaking techniques get a little bit more looser, a little bit more risk-taking, a little bit more non-conventional, a lot more interesting, like exterior tracking shots going up stairwells and things. And I thought that was all kind of interesting, and it's stuff that Kurosawa was doing to get a feel. But it's like, you know, it's a lot more cerebral than like just inherently fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
But now the fun, that's another one where this movie is really going to, because I did feel, even though I like this movie a lot, this felt much more like taking my medicine in like, even in a way Citizen, like I said, Citizen Kane holds up as a modern movie appealing right to America. You know, it's made for Americans, about the America. This is not entirely outside, because, like, you know, it's a very human film. This is stuff that's kind of like universal, but definitely the flavor is, you know, middle-aged Japanese men.
There are a couple of fun scenes I remember, like him partying, but they sometimes end in just deep despair. Like, he starts that's singing, the and then it's like, ah, oh, well, you blew up that, huh?
Yeah.
I was having fun here.
This film is pretty bleak. There's like fun in like absurdist Kafka-esque. Like, I think it's funny the women getting to run around by the bureaucracy about the cesspool that is in their park or whatever.
Yep.
That is pretty funny, but it's filmed intentionally so as well. But yeah, this isn't a laugh a minute type of podcast or a movie. So I'm saying this is like a 2.5.
Yeah.
2 or 2.5?
Let's go with a 2. I don't remember anything really funny from it at all.
Okay, so that gives us 8.5. All right, so just in raw terms of score, it looks like in Bruges and Indiana Jones are top two.
And Afterlife.
And then, yep, Afterlife.
Keeping up with the Joneses.
Trying to get to a top. And then we got an 8.5. We got two 8.5s. I think it's going to round out our top 10.
Okay. Is there anything we want to shade here? Like, cheat just a little bit to get it in there?
The only thing I could say is maybe substitute Karate Kid for Ikiru.
Oh.
Ikiru.
I was going to substitute Karate Kid like for Enemy of the State, but yeah, Enemy of the State is unique in this list because it has, you know, the stuff we like to talk about, right? Technology and
yeah. Why did we give why
privacy?
Did we give, was it a yeah?
Boy.
I mean, there's the ones that I would want to shade would include Dead Poets Society and Harry Potter and the Karate Kid.
Yeah, I think Dead Poets and Karate Kid are ones I want to shade too. But yeah, In Bruges feels like it's the clear winner.
In Bruges feels good. Crusade feels good. I'm fine with Afterlife, Akira, Enemy of the State as rounding out the top five. But yeah, I'd want to get this doesn't reflect my feelings about the podcast, I don't think, this year. If it was like just in terms of Karate Kid would probably be under Afterlife for me, and then Harry Potter would be at 5. But there again, that's just because I really like, I'm never going to get to do that again. I'm never going to get to get Jim to watch a Harry Potter and talk about it. So that felt good.
I mean,
perspective.
Look, I'll talk about just about anything. I'll watch and talk about pretty much anything, but you might not like me watching and talking about it.
Right.
Yeah. See, I'm really wanting to shade.
I do think that'd be an interesting idea of a podcast, like the idea of you've got a prosecutor and a defense.
Okay.
And like, so we're gonna like that'd be an interesting.
You have to make
series.
Some laws, you know, you'd have to establish law, and I guess you would do that over the course
of
reviewing it, right?
Objection. The lawyer's being a shit, Your Honor.
The defense
rests. It'd be interesting that like someone that like it, and that it'd be interesting, especially if we could find something that the reverse is true, which is a lot harder, where like you really love something and I loathe it.
How about this? How about we do a podcast where we go over the Harry Potter movies and we do it like a court case?
Yeah.
We present our arguments and then we put it up to a vote for the audience. Like, okay, given the facts of the case, do you think this is a good movie or a bad movie? And then we let like our patrons
some kind of fucking lawyer to win any of these battles against Harry Potter.
Harry Potter, honestly. Yeah, I know. There's a huge fandom out there. But it'd be interesting not just for Harry Potter, right? For really anything.
Yeah. No, I like it called the Defense Rest or something. That'd be cool.
Yeah.
Especially if I think we'd have a hard time finding like the things that you're passionate about that I'm like, yeah, fuck this shit. Can I think of a single example where you really love something and I despise it or just completely indifferent? I guess that's the thing. It's not that you despise it, you just are indifferent to it, completely indifferent.
Yeah, I don't tend to like really hate on things. I just don't give my time to them.
Battlestar Galactica is the one thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I really like Battlestar Galactica, the reimagining. Yeah.
And that's the thing is I suspect if I would stick with it a little bit longer, I'd probably learn to overlook the things I dislike about it and like the characters enough.
From what you said, I don't know that that's true, man. I wouldn't recommend it for you. That's for sure.
Because if President Rosman never changes and ends up being like that, like to me, that's like Kai Winn being a protagonist. And I'm like, I don't see how the fuck I could ever come in the corner. Okay. Yeah. I might be hot for the prosecution rests Battlestar Galactica edition.
If we can go a little bit on a tangent here about Battlestar Galactica, I think both Roslin and Adama are co-protagonists and co-antagonists at times. Like they're both meant to like balance of power each other. And I think that worked really well for me, even though at times I hated both of them.
Okay.
More I hated Roslin more because she's got the religious angle going on. But
that's what I'm saying. It feels like rooting for Kai Winn if I'm forced to root for President Rosman. But
she's not that bad because I hate Kai Winn so much. But yeah.
Oh, she's the worst. She's the fucking worst, man. Yeah. Okay, well, so do we actually want to shade anything? Do we actually want to bring up the Karate Kid and Dead Poet Society or the Karate Kid and Harry Potter and display some things? I kind of feel strongly about Karate Kid. I think Karate Kid should be at least a number 5 spot.
Yeah.
So,
oh man,
you want to bump Kira it for Akira or bump it for Enemy of the State?
I'd almost bump Enemy of the State.
One way to look at this is like, what do you want the Bald Move community to go give a second chance to if they missed it or didn't watch it? And I'm like, I would much rather like shine a light on either Akira or Sand Pebbles than I would.
Sand Pebbles.
And like, yeah,
here.
Well, no, I'm, yeah.
Yeah, let's put that at the bottom. Let's maybe clean this up just a hair.
So Akira and then the Karate Kid.
Okay, Kiryu, Karate Kid. Yeah, I can go with that. Karate Kid just sneaks onto this list because of how entertaining the whole package was.
Yeah. Oh, God, that fucking, the Green Power Ranger or whatever. Is he really the Green Power Ranger, or are we just joking that he looks like the Green Power Ranger?
Yeah, it's not really him, but he looks just like him.
That the idea of this guy, this successful billionaire guy who's taking baths in gold bath and he's just going to help his loser Vietnam buddy destroy this teenager's life.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing. The petty, vengeful teenager stuff with a grown-ass man. It's hilarious. Yeah. A billionaire. I mean, this is a very rich and powerful man attacking a child. Yeah. Granted, the child is like 35 years old at that point. But
and the way the filmmakers write this guy, like where he's like making these big deals on the phone where he's shitting, in his silk boxers. It's just so stupid.
And he's practicing he's showing off his karate moves like Mac from Always Sunny. And
right. Yeah. Oh, and he's seducing Daniel in the background, like trying to turn him against me,
Yep.
By these false shows of respect.
He's trying to break his spirit and his body, too.
His body, too.
Yeah.
He's like literally like the joke in Kung Pao Entered Fist. He's deliberately training him wrong as a joke.
Yes. Yeah.
Right?
Uh-huh.
Okay, I think we got a good place. So top five in Bruges, Indiana Jones, Afterlife, Akira, and The Karate Kid.
Nice. We'll be right back with more Bald Move after this brief pause.
You've been listening to quite a few Bald Move podcasts now, but you're not in the club? Whoo boy, you are missing out.
Not only are all of our premium club podcast feeds completely ad-free, but we have lots of other great content exclusively for people in the club.
There's a weekly lunch with Jim and Aaron where we chat with fans about anything and everything from TV and films, food, fun, life advice, and more.
But there's also Off the Clock, our premium podcast where we talk about all the shows we don't have time for on our public feeds.
Plus, you get access to our full spoiler-filled first-run movie reviews of our newly released films.
Don't forget Instant Take and Talk podcast, where we give our hot takes and discuss television shows with our fans live and immediately after the episode airs.
With mega shows like House of the Dragon coming this summer, we're going to have lots to talk about.
Not to mention access to our fun and friendly community of club members, with exclusive Discord channels and a dedicated forum. It's one of the best places on the internet to hang out and chat about pop culture.
Bottom line, you're helping two regular type guys in the Midwest make the content you like to listen to, which some would say is rewarding to itself.
Help keep the lights on and the bits flowing at Bald Move.
And get some awesome content for yourself. Head to support.baldmove.com to join the club today. Commission podcasts are an awesome feature here at Bald Move that allows you, the individual listener, to decide what we talk about for a single podcast.
The community loves it because it often leads to fun, fan-favorite films and TV shows that we've overlooked getting the coverage they deserve.
And we love it because we're constantly exposed to great stuff that's not even on our radar.
The way it works is simple. You go to support.baldmove.com and you click on commissions. Then you pay the flat rate for the commission and tell us what two-ish hours of content you'd like us to make podcasts on.
Then we'll contact you for details, advanced feedback, and any dedications you'd like to make.
Then we watch the thing, discuss the thing, turn it into a podcast, and pump it right into your ears.
We get consistently great feedback on how much our commissioners love their podcast, and they make great gifts for the dedicated Bald Move fan in your life.
And who knows, that dedicated fan could even be you. Treat yourself. Check out support.baldmove.com for more info. And now, back with more Bald Move. How about
first run Bald Movies? So this is like sink. This is where we sink or swim, right?
As far as choosing what category sink, to do next, or
sink, rise, sink, float, or to the top, stay the same, or sink, rise, or float. Indiana Jones, Dial Destiny, floater.
Yep.
Like here, it's going to get controversial right away. John Wick to the top or float?
I feel like we do the to the top sort just to separate the wheat from the chaff. Obvious wheat from chaff, and then
Renfield. I think I'm a floater on that one.
Float that one. Tetris, I'm also going to float.
Tetris.
I hate to say it.
Dungeons & Dragons to the top.
Yeah.
Guardians of the Galaxy to the top?
I could float Guardians.
You could float Guardians.
Yeah, I think they're...
I think they're easily better than... That's what I'm saying. It's like, I feel like...
Yeah.
You tell me when we stop rising.
I mean, there's going to be a Guardians top 10 here
fast,
to float.
Spider-Man
to the
across...
top.
To the Spider-Verse, I think that all floats too. It goes to the top.
Oh, okay. Sure, I could put all those to the top. Yeah.
Guardians 3, Fast X, Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, boom, going to the top. Ant-Man, Wasp, Quantumania, float.
Yeah.
Creed 3?
To the top. I really liked Creed 3.
What do you think about...
Cocaine Bear?
What do you think about Cocaine Bear? Is that a floater?
That's probably a floater. It was fun, but...
I enjoyed it a lot, yeah.
I don't know. You want to get to the top and see how it fares against the likes of John Wick 4?
I'm just saying I enjoyed it a lot.
I did too. There were a couple scenes that shocked me in the perfect right ways.
So to the top?
I mean, it's not going to make it in the top five. I can tell you that.
It's better than I... Okay, no, I agree. We're going to be... It's going to be sinking next time, but I didn't quite make it all the way to the top of that either. Killers of Flower Moon, to the top?
Yeah. Yeah, sure. The creator, I would also put to the top. I don't know that it'll win anything.
Yeah.
But...
well, it's a lot about
Extraction. Extraction 2 to the top.
And Barbie and Oppenheimer to the top. Are we going to float Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1?
Yes, because of... Well, first of all, we got to change the name to just Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning. No Part 1 anymore. That's the problem with Mission Impossible is it's half a movie.
Yeah.
Just like Dune was half a movie.
Yep. Which we are very close to getting the end of that, man. Two mm-hmm. more weeks.
Yeah, that might be out before this is... Was that March 1st it comes out? Yeah, it will be.
Okay. So so we're going to float it?
Yeah. Asteroid City to the top.
City to the top. What about Silent... Oh, no, no.
Silent Night, Silent no. Night. God, no.
Silent Night, can bottom. We sink?
Yeah,
to the bottom.
It.
Yeah,
like a big stinky
like
shit.
A
it is
turd. And like then the Napoleon dance. Holdovers, we're gonna have to the top on both of them, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so we just fucking invert sorted our list somehow.
So the cutoff here is Renfield, right? Like, can we do numbers on this? Let's do that.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Good call. We should do that on all these. We should turn the ordered list, the unordered list, to ordered as we rank them.
Yeah.
So now we can do better or worse, right?
Yeah, totally.
And Renfield is the cream of the crop line?
I think so. Indiana Jones was first, but I would have gone to the top with Dial of Destiny, so.
Yeah. Napoleon versus the Holdovers. I say the Holdovers is better.
I mean, the Holdovers, yeah. It has no flaws.
This is a short film. This might actually win the whole thing. I never would have thought that at the beginning of the year, but it might win. I don't. It might. There's a lot of good ass movies in this list.
There are.
Napoleon. I thought Napoleon was better than it's like. I don't understand why this movie was hated before it was released. I don't understand why people hate Ridley Scott now. I don't understand why they want him to stop making films. I don't know why you would ever want to do that.
Right.
But. It is great looking. It is fascinating. Mm-hmm. It is ahistorical in a lot of areas. Like, you would come away arguably knowing less about Napoleon watching this film.
Hmm.
You know, like, I don't think this really even touches on the genius of him and, like, why he's considered a military genius.
And I think that's the
problem.
He knows
he uses cannons, you know?
Yeah, right.
He's willing to use cannons on ice. Defenseless. And yeah.
He's willing to use his environment better right. than others. I mean, and that's kind of what left me cold, no pun intended, about this movie. I never really connected with any of the characters. I never felt like I A, understood them, or B, sympathized with them.
Yeah. And I will say that, like, the historicity of it isn't a killer to me, because, like, I love Amadeus, the movie, and that is very little to do about... you know, Mozart or Scolari or any of those guys. Like, it's a dramatized version, highly fictionalized account of the history, and it's an amazing fucking film that I love to watch. I really liked the Josephine stuff. I thought that was the highlight. I think they did do a really good job of kind of, like, shedding a little bit of light into that very non-conventional relationship. But
yeah,
ultimately, it's a good-looking, kind of empty-headed film.
I'm with you on that. Whereas Asteroid City.
Is it better?
I think it was. I certainly enjoyed it more. It's tough for me to say because Wes Anderson just is Wes Anderson. He does what Wes Anderson does. And I always think, like, I've seen it. I've seen enough Wes Anderson for my life. There are 90 movies out there that have this style. And then I see another one and I'm like, oh, yeah. I like Wes Anderson stuff, you know? And this is new Wes Anderson.
And I will say that amongst the hardest I've ever laughed in a theater was the sequence of the alien.
Yeah, That was great.
Coming back to Asteroid City. Like, that whole sequence was just killing, whipping the entire audience's ass, man.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes I'm the only one horse laughing at, like, you know, just donkey braying at the thing. But, like, it felt like the whole theater was in on this is some fucking top tier absurdist visual humor.
Yeah. Yeah. It kind of comes out of nowhere. It's like a departure
like
for the
Scarlett
movie.
Like full frontal Scarlett Johansson nudity just comes out of nowhere.
and backle. What? I mean, what do you call the rear
front
nudity?
Rural
nudity. Yeah. In the mirror, you get more of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, I liked it more than Napoleon for sure.
Okay. I'll go along with that.
If you're into it, I would put it above Napoleon.
The Creator.
Ooh, this is a tough one.
So this could have been a masterpiece.
Yeah.
What were its flaws?
I'm trying to remember.
I'll say the
resolution wasn't super surprising or interesting.
The world building was nonsensical. Like they never really I remember thinking, like, why is a big floating bomber with a ridiculous anime, like, aiming rectangle? Why is that the ultimate weapon against the AI? I didn't understand that. I thought the central character was not fleshed out enough to make this stuff work, I think. Which I'm starting to wonder if that's a referendum on David... what's his... Is David Michael...
John David Washington?
Denzel. John David. I started to think it's like this might be who he is, because I look at that, this movie, I look at Tenet, and I look at these movies are problematic because the leading man that's everything swirling around is, it's, well, in the Tenet's case, is just deliberately underwritten, but also he's just not magnetic enough to carry that. Like, could Denzel. But if you put Denzel like from 20, 30 years ago in The Creator, is it just automatically better? I kind of think it is, because I kind of think I've seen him in good stuff. I really liked. Wasn't he in like Black Klansman? I know he was in Ballers. That's the first thing I remember him. And I remember thinking he's like, man, this guy is really charismatic. He's got the old man stuff. I don't know.
But yeah, and sometimes direction can cause problems, right? If they're not letting you do the thing that you're capable of doing because it doesn't fit the movie quite the way they want it to, that can cause problems.
But in these kind of movies where they kind of are tugging on your heartstrings or are trying to make you feel a certain way about a certain type of people, I thought that the central guy being a question mark is a little rough. And also, it still doesn't sit well with me how they use the butchery of these robots as a joke in a couple of sequences. Where, like, the film's opinion is these aren't real people and it's funny that this is happening to them.
I recall us disagreeing a little bit on the nature of those scenes, but I can't remember if that's a false memory or not.
Christ. Yeah, I mean, I did very strongly feel like I remember it was the scene where the like security robots got blown up and like the dog, like the dog piss on them.
Yeah,
I know there's something in related to a dog too, and they're kind of like walking around like without heads blown, and there's like the bomb
had,
robot,
like,
was playing.
Not a probe droid, but like a Naboo. What are the freaking,
yeah, the battle droids.
Yes, it had a battle droid feel to it at times.
Yeah, and it's like, that's not something you would do in a movie about, like, human slavery. You wouldn't.
Rest of this movie is so... I mean, it's going for a really powerful thing, and then, it has moments like that where... Visually, I'll say the world building is kind of incredible. I think this movie looks amazing.
The blending of real actors, and I mean, this has been the case for like 10, 20 years, but like it just is rock solid. The child with the cylinders in their heads
and the
all
creativity
those, like,
of it, not just the technical aspect, but I think it's very creatively, it's very interesting looking. It's just, you know, some of that creativity doesn't extend to the realm of logic at times.
Yeah.
They're going for visual creativity.
And I think there's a couple of interesting things I like that they did in terms of you know, juxtaposing American individualism and versus like more Eastern collectivism.
I mean, it's right up our alley subject wise, but yeah, there were just some things about it that were a little creaky.
I don't think it's better than Napoleon for sure.
Yeah, I think I'm with you.
Do you know what's better than Creator?
Extraction 2, maybe?
Extraction 2.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Did we do an OTC on this?
Nope.
Because goddamn.
It'd been a great
badass season thing to do.
Or maybe we did. Maybe we did an OTC on Extraction 1 and 2 because we watched them over the weekend.
Maybe
just
we
back
did.
To back.
Yeah.
Must have come back and talked about it because otherwise it wouldn't be on this list, right?
True. I think this goes to number 2. This is better than Creator, better than Napoleon, better than Asteroid City.
Yeah, I'm with you 100%.
All right.
I think it has to stop at the holdovers because
cannot get over to holdovers. Okay, here's one that you're gonna have to you tell me.
I'll
when you think
here.
I'm full of shit.
Oh, I've never seen this movie.
Barbie is better than the Creator.
Oh, you're full of shit.
Napoleon.
You're full of shit. You're full of shit. I mean, if I hear the word Barbie movie, it's the reason why I didn't see it. Like, I'm not interested at all in the concept of this movie.
Well, that's certainly attitude I like to encourage here at Bald Move. So you're going to fight me over it's better than the Creator?
No, I'm going to let you rank this because I've not seen it.
Oh.
Unless you try and put it at number one, and then I'm going to fight you.
Yeah. No, I'm struggling about... Because here's the thing. I didn't like this movie, and I expected to.
Yeah, that surprised
and
me.
And then I have absorbed a lot of other people's thoughts and feelings, and I really intended to come back and watch Barbie again. Maybe I need to do this before we're done with the Baldy season to see if I fundamentally changed my mind. But I don't know. I have a hard time putting it over Asteroid City.
Okay. Number 4 it is.
So I want to leave it there, Barbie. Now let's Oppenheimer. Here we go.
Yeah.
Oppenheimer's better than the Creator and Napoleon. And I will say Barbie. And okay. I will say Asteroid City. And I will say Extraction.
Oh, Extraction. Man, they are so wildly different movies. Extraction 2 is kind of exactly the thing it needs to be for what it is.
So the thing about Oppenheimer, that's the thing, is like both of these movies are fully realized visions that are rock solid and have no false notes.
Mm-hmm.
Oppenheimer is like a $200 million movie intended for IMAX screens, and Extraction 2 was it was like Netflix, right?
Yeah.
Netflix cash in. But it's a good one. It's a really good Netflix cash in.
Yeah, and it's like about the best badass movie you could hope for, a traditional badass movie in this day and age.
Straight out of the 80s. Yep. This is a straight out of the 80s badass, maybe lightly updated with its kind of political sensibilities in terms of, but not even really, if you go back and look at some of the, this is just a really good 80s film that was shot in 2023.
I'd say, you know, Oppenheimer way more ambitious. It's trying to tell a morally complex story in a complex way. I mean, it takes its time doing it, right? This is like a
so much so that most
movie.
People, the its most vociferous critics, I feel like miss the entire like the big criticism is like this movie doesn't have its final act doesn't justify itself.
Mm.
Where it's like, I think, you know, the whole point of that last act was this man spent so much of his life trying to beat the Nazis to this bombs, this thing that he has personally had a lot of mixed feelings about.
Mm-hmm.
And then as soon as his use to the war machine was over and he started, you know, he wanted to be like, oh, I'm going to be the father of the atomic bomb and I'm going to use that position to speak out against my Frankenstein creation and like influence, shape the world thought on that. He was immediately sidelined as a communist.
Mm-hmm.
And either get that or you don't.
Right. Like the irony and the tragedy of it all. Like,
right. Cause like people's like, well, it's like, who cares? It's his reputation. Well,
he cares.
if his reputation wasn't smeared and he was able to, yeah, like, you know, what would the world be different if he had, you know, been able to soften our views on, you know, mm-hmm. but it's a weird counterfactual to take, because it's not like there was like unrestrained nuclear war that happened in the 80s and 90s because people just didn't take any warnings. It's like,
right.
Yeah, it's like the world as it played out has been a remarkably safe place in the era of atomic weapons, when you could have, like, by now had a limit. Like even I think if you'd ask people in the 40s and 50s that 50 years from or 80 years hence, you were going to have a limited exchange between nuclear powers, and like 5 or 6 of the world's great cities will be just wiped off the map. But that's it. And the world's like, that's never again. They'd be like, wow, we got lucky. The fact that nothing has happened, not a single rogue nuke has blown, not a single brinksmanship got escalated to the point, like the fact that we haven't even killed her, like, I think that's like incredible.
Yeah.
So but it does blunt what they're trying to do with Oppenheimer, because things kind of worked out okay.
Yeah, you didn't need Oppenheimer's reputation to weigh on those scales.
Also, can I ask you, are we seriously going to have a list where Extraction is higher than Oppenheimer? Is that what we're going to do here?
I don't think so. This is what I'm arguing for, right? Like, the complexity of it, the difficulty of telling the story, the execution of it, too. It's very good. I'm trying to remember the Florence Depew of it all. Is it Depew or is it Pew? Florence Pew.
Florence Pew. I say the Pew because it's an old
Pepe Le
Crooked Pew media joke.
Oh. So I'm trying to remember if I really liked that or ended up a little disappointed by it. And I can't remember.
It's weird because a lot of stuff is just thrown in to be faithful to a biography of Oppenheimer. But like, it doesn't, like, in the way that a lot of things in life do, it doesn't really connect. Like, there's a couple things they told us where, like, Oppenheimer and his wife are kind of bad parents and bad people.
Yeah. I mean, it colors in who this man is, right?
That
he has this affair and like, and
he can't be careless with people,
very careless with her. Yeah. Like, understands that she's kind of on the edge here and does not tread appropriately.
Yeah. He's such a big horn dog that he does the thing anyway. Yeah. That's what I thought. And then there's a scene that, like, things blink and you miss, where it's like, I think Oppenheimer and his wife get their children taken from them.
Oh God.
Or like they're sent away. I think. But it's like one of those things where it's like, it's harder. You know, I admire what Nolan did, and it's kind of like, you know, I'm going to tell the story, warts and all. And, you know, it's just a complicated picture of a singular person that did a incredible singular thing. But it does. Yeah, it's not as good as a story as if they had maybe prune some of those branches a bit.
Yeah, so maybe it's not as perfectly neat of a package as Extraction 2 is, but it's way more ambitious. It's got to be number 2, right?
I think so.
So far. I think so. So far. Because now we're talking about Killers of the Flower Moon.
Killers of the Flower Moon, I had enormous expectations, and it easily cleared everyone and was better than I thought it was going to be. In fact, I keep on thinking about last night's True Detective finale in context of Killers of the Flower Moon. Mm-hmm. Like, that thing with Clark is so much of peace with Leo DiCaprio's character in Killers of the Flower Moon.
Yeah.
Okay. Killers of the Flower Moon, better than Creator, better than Napoleon, better than Barbie, better than Asteroid City, better than Extraction. Is it better than Oppenheimer? I say yes. What do you say?
Oh, boy, I'm trying to jog the old memory cells here. Spin up the old platters, because...
Here's one way to look at it. I think Scorsese could have done Oppenheimer, and it would have been a fucking amazing job. I don't think Nolan could have done Killers of the Flower Moon. I think Nolan might be able to in 30 years, but where he is right now as a film, I don't think he can do it.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's a valid way to look at it,
right?
But I will say this, Killers of the Flower Moon stuck with me a lot. a lot longer. Like Oppenheimer. And I do want to watch Oppenheimer again because I keep on wanting to watch it with my son. I think he would enjoy it. But I think Killers is strictly better than Oppenheimer. Was more successful, had a much bigger wallop, had a much clearer idea of what they wanted to do and how they wanted you to feel.
Yeah, I guess the thing that if I'm thinking about the movie now, I guess the thing that is putting me off of it is expectation. I kind of hoped and expected that these native peoples would fight back a little harder. It's an unreasonable expectation given the time and the situation, but like
it feels like the big flaw was that they put their faith in the white man's institutions. Like, yeah. Oh, you know what? If we got enough money together that we could fight them at their own game, that we'd win.
Right.
And it makes it even more interesting, Coda, to True Detective, where it's like, at that point, the people in that work are just like, nah, fuck this. We're gonna go the other way on it.
Yeah, it's like they won, but it's a weird, like, subversion of themselves to win this battle. It was... Mm-hmm. Yeah, Yeah, I could see it. I could see Killers of the Flower Moon being like just nudging out Oppenheimer here. But I hate to say it, I think Holdovers is going to stay at number one for now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And it's a tough one because like a 90-minute Christmas film.
Mm-hmm.
I have a hard time saying that it's better than Killers of the Flower Moon. It's more of just like, you know what? It's been a rough fucking year. Holdovers made me feel light and happy and hopeful. And Killers of the Flower Moon made me think, Jesus Christ, there's just way too much debt, way too much moral debt that we have. That's we're never paying this shit off. But yeah, I think it's so you like it in the number two spot.
Yeah, I'm in agreement there.
Boy, Creed 3. Boy.
Yeah.
That was a hell of some like Shakespearean storytelling they're doing with this like Mike Tyson-esque figure played by Kang the Conqueror. And I don't know, like Coogler's like, he's like, I'll say this, he's making a much more interesting and ambitious Rocky series than Sly Stallone did. Like Sly Stallone, once he won an Oscar, I think he was content to just cash checks, and Coogler seems like he's still wanting to do interesting stuff, you know? Like if like Coogler feels like his Rocky series so far is Rocky 1, Rocky 2, Balboa. You know, like you skip the three, or
yeah. I mean, like, he's subverting the genre, or maybe not subverting the genre, but he's exploring and evolving it, I think. Whereas like Sylvester Stallone just kind of, as much as he defined that era of it, he just kind of leaned into the tropes of boxing movies, you know?
Yeah, yeah, and it got sillier and sillier as things went along.
For sure.
So, like I said, I think Creed 3 is better than The Creator. Probably more successful than Napoleon, but it's going to be hard for it to get over to Barbie Hill for me.
Yeah, and I think Asteroid City is a, you know, extremely well executed vision
hardball.
Yeah.
Okay, is The Cocaine Bear better than The Creator?
Nah.
I enjoyed the hell out of a Cocaine Bear, but Cocaine Bear was a slightly more refined Sharknado. Let's just get it straight.
And there are like two scenes that really stand out to me there that make me like Cocaine Bear.
The kids getting high on cocaine.
The ambulance scene where they run over.
The scene went really hard.
Yeah. That one stood out. And it turns out this is not Ray Liotta's final movie. They were billing it as...
Will we ever?
We might it's never like see parable, his final film. Yeah, he made
it's
60.
Like the parable of like you head off towards your destination. You always take you always go halfway there.
You'll
never get to your destination because it's like I feel like that way with Ray Liotta's last movie. It's like they're always going to have like
30 years from now, Pixar is going to release a movie where Ray Liotta recorded a single word of dialogue.
Someone had their cell phone out while he was he's going through the craft services table and got him picking up a Danish and being like, "Eh, smells like a good Danish," and
they'll use it as stock footage on a TV behind the main character. Yeah.
That would be really funny if an old Ray Liotta movie is on in the background of and it's like,
his
final role. All right, I'm going to say something really controversial. Guardians of the Galaxy at Volume 3 at number 11 is fine where it is.
I agree with that.
You're going to have to fight for this. Okay, because
I said, I liked Guardians of the Galaxy more than you, but not enough to bump it up into the top 10. Because we have Murderer's Row still
loved, to get through. Loved Guardians of the Galaxy. I actually like Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 more than I liked Volume 1. This, whatever this was, this dark, depressing... Marvel, man. Yeah. Okay, good. I thought you would fight to get it.
You don't
higher,
like
but...
a golden god.
Oh, and that's I forget about Adam Warlock and how shit he is in this film.
I know you really hated him. Fast
I don't
X.
Know, man. Hey, can we real quick? How excited are you for the gun era of the DC universe? Because I'm wondering if James Gunn is actually the savior that we like. What if he's a one trick pony? What if he only knows how to take the weird aspects that people don't appreciate and take them just serious enough to get a gag out of it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he could absolutely be that. Just like one note, and that note will get old pretty fast.
Yeah. Can can Peacemaker and Guardians of the Galaxy by themselves get to an in-game situation? I don't know. And that's what DC's hoping, because I've yet to see James Gunn do anything but that.
Mm-hmm.
And he can get in some really great emotional character work, like what he did with the Ratcatcher in the Suicide Squad, I think is amazing. What he did with some of the stuff in Peacemaker and his team and relationships with that is pretty amazing. He can get, but it's like, fundamentally, it's all based on Silly String, and I just don't know.
Yeah, we'll see.
Fast X, I think.
Not based on Silly String.
I mean, it's better in Cocaine Bear, but... And I liked Fast X a lot, but that Momoa stuff is weird.
Yeah.
That should have been one of their better villains, and it's just a weird take, and...
I mean, the concept of him being sort of just behind the scenes at all times. I know it's a Fast and Furious thing to do, right? Like,
what they're doing more and more.
Oh, the
that,
guy didn't actually die. He was saved at the last moment. Whatever. But
I can't wait to see how John Cena was blown to safety.
Yes.
It might be okay with where it's at, but I would get it to 10 if it was just up to me.
I think that's good, too. We can knock Cocaine Bear out of the top 10 for sure.
I would put it over the creator.
I would put it over Napoleon.
Okay. Deal. Done and done.
All right. Oh, yeah.
All right. Here we go. Violent Rise of Spider-Man Across the Universe, which is better than Guardians. You tell me when.
Bonesaw is
Guardians.
Ready.
It's better than Cocaine Bear. It's better than the creator. It's better than Napoleon. It's better than Fast X. It's better than Creed. It's better than Barbie. It's better than Asteroid City. It's getting where it needs to be. I think it's better than Extraction.
Yep, that was exactly where I was going to put it. Number 4. Just below the killers of the directors here. The two.
And it's incredible. And this is one of the ones where I got to watch a lot of it and enjoy it during the marathon that we just did. Mm-hmm. And this movie is so fucking tightly plotted, and how it goes back even to the first movie. Man, these guys just know what the hell they're doing.
Yeah, I love it, especially after having seen now the James Garfield ones. It's like, that's not my era of Spider-Man, obviously, but like, for anybody watching this movie, it's just such a treat to see all of these characters come back.
We'll be right back with more Bald Move after this brief pause.
try to make it super easy to support making podcasts at Bald Move. Just join the club.
But some people aren't a joining type, or maybe they're already in the club but want to add a little bit of gratuity for an especially great season of coverage, or for a podcast that really spoke to them, or gave them that bit of support in a tough time.
For these, and for whatever other reason you might have, our tip jar is always open. Head over to support.baldmove.com and click the donate option to say, hey, keep doing what you're doing. We appreciate it.
Once again, check out support.baldmove.com for all the great ways to help me and Jim keep making the podcast you love. And now, back with more Bald Move. And for my son, Miles Morales is fucking Spider-Man.
Sure.
Tom Holland's cool too, but this is the guy. This is the guy. My son worships these movies. Loves the soundtrack.
Wonder
loves
if they're
the
ever
art style,
do a,
draws that stuff.
I wonder if they're ever going to do a live action Miles Morales film.
I think it makes a lot of sense, especially if Marvel goes kind of back to its roots and stops trying to do this like everything interconnected Disney Plus shit and just starts telling like, yeah, just Spider-Man Miles Morales.
And as far as like, I think this movie tops into the Spider-Verse, and that's saying a lot.
Yes,
because Into was so good.
And it's hard because like Into,
not just in its like quality overall, but like even its art direction, I think is even better than the first one, which was already amazing.
They continue to push the limits of like, it's like this movie is much more stylistic in some scenes. Like it's like just lets the emotional palette take over in a way that the first one didn't. Because I think that's the thing is like this movie wouldn't exist without the first one. So like the first one made space for itself and justified itself so that this one could go from that platform and, you know,
and the blending of styles. I mean, all the stuff they're doing with frame rates and animation styles and time periods, it's all incredible. I will say I think the clunkiest thing in this entire movie is when Donald Glover shows up as a live action character. It doesn't quite mesh with the visuals as well as I would hope.
It's really like, funny though,
but it's a very good moment, but visually it's the weakest part of the
because absolutely movie. In some universe he is the Prowler in a live action Miles Morales movie.
Yeah,
you say it's like, you're right, they probably will make a live action, but can I say it's a shame? Because I think this works just beautifully in animation. Like, Miles Morales will not be better in live action. It might be good in different ways, but you're never going to get this kind of sheer visual freedom and joy out of anything live action.
Yeah, you're right.
Okay, here's another one. Dungeons and Dragons, violently rising. Well, maybe not violently.
I mean, this is a very entertaining movie.
If you slept on this movie, you really shouldn't. This movie is badass. This movie is funny. This movie has a heart. This movie, like, single-handedly justifies Michelle Rodriguez being on the badass list. Like, it's like she is just has so many great fight scenes in this and Fast X, to be honest. It's better than Guardians.
If you have a bad history with Dungeons and Dragons in film and TV, then forget all that and go watch this movie because it's none of that stuff. It's not cheesy in the least.
It's better than Guardians. It's better than Cocaine Bear. It's better than the Creator. It's better than Napoleon. It's better than Fast X. It's better than Creed.
This is my wall, I think, for this one, Asteroid City. But what about Barbie?
I was gonna say if it's your wall for Asteroid City, then I think it has to be my wall for Barbie. But no, you know what? Fuck Barbie. It's better than Barbie. I haven't got that. Maybe, and I can always watch the movie again this weekend and change my mind. But I'm glad the gals out there. And a fair amount of the guys like Barbie. It just left me a little cold. All right, John Wick Chapter 4.
Yeah.
Oof. Just when you thought the franchise was getting soft and they might kill the Keanu that laid the golden egg. It's better than Guardians. It's better than Cocaine Bear. It's better than Creator. Better than Napoleon. Better than Fast X. Better than Creed. Is it better than Dungeons and Dragons?
Oh man,
it's a really fucking good end to the series.
why do I remember having some issues with this movie? Probably because I did.
I wonder what the issues were.
That's a very good question.
the last few acts of this movie are almost perfect. It's a little bit too, I think both of us complained about the CGI. That there's a few, like, they got a little bit of Fast X territory where it's like, you know, it's almost a Marvel like that. I think around the Arc of Triumph, I think that stuff was pretty bad.
That was
bad.
A really fun scene, though.
It's a fun scene, but it also was not real in any kind of sense at all. And that's what I like about, you know, it's what separates John Wick from Fast X, you know?
Yeah.
I think it's better in Dungeons & Dragons and probably Asteroid City, but it's not better in Extraction.
I mean, as an example of the genre, I do agree Extraction is maybe slightly better. Better than Asteroid City. Yeah. I agree with that.
We might be overvaluing Asteroid City. I'll put that out there.
Maybe. Like I said, it's more Wes Anderson, you know?
And it has its moments, I don't think it's in my top five Wes Anderson, and it's just like in the top 10 of the year. That's kind of, I don't know. What do you think about Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny?
It needs to
go up. Surprisingly, better than Guardians. I can't believe Cocaine Bear is better than Guardians. That might be a little much.
Well, once we got out of the top 10, I stopped really caring.
Okay. So it's better than, what are we talking about? Indiana Jones. Better than Guardians, better than Cocaine, better than Creator. But man, here's where it gets tricky for me.
Yeah.
Is it better than Napoleon? Where do we, so like, here's
I
the
enjoyed
thing.
It more for sure, but is it better?
Is Dial of Destiny better than Raiders or Crusade?
No, but it's not that far off. It's way better than Crystal Skull.
It's way better than Crystal Skull. I don't even know, like, someone made a really good argument about it not even better than Temple of Doom, which has always been my least favorite.
Yeah, I could see
not counting.
I have more affinity for Temple of Doom for sure.
So it's like, it's more of like, this was a surprise that they didn't fuck it up, than this is a legit good Indiana Jones movie. But it kind of is.
Yeah, that's the other thing. I really liked what they did. So some people don't like time travel in Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
I really liked what they did with the time travel stuff.
I thought
in
that
Indiana
was
Jones.
Fucking badass.
Yeah.
And I also don't mind the young Indiana Jones digital effects. I think it was a little uncanny in a second or two,
but that shit with the train, amazing.
I thought was good. Mm-hmm. I thought that was really good. And old man Indiana Jones riding through the Apollo 11 ticker tape parade. While the commies were chasing him,
yep,
was super. Well, no, they're neo-fascist. It was super good. A lot of the set pieces just worked. Felt like much more integrated and believable than in like Crystal Skull. But that's a fucking low ass barrier to the clear. And I just, man, is it really better than Napoleon? Is it really better than Fast X?
I mean, the word better
is
tripping me up, right? Because, like,
I know, right? Like, I feel it's better than Fast X. No, it's not better than Fast X, or it's better than Fast X, but not Napoleon. And Fast X is over Napoleon right now somehow.
Okay.
I'm like, really? Napoleon is the 12th best movie I saw this year? Do I really believe that? But then I always ask myself that question too when I'm watching like professional critics and they've got like their top 10 and it's like half of it is like foreign films I've never heard of. I'm like, did you really like that better than Dungeons and Dragons?
Or are you trying to show off?
Maybe. There's sometimes you can really feel the wank, the intellectual masturbation of like, I like this thing that everybody else likes for the right reasons and I'm a better person. And
Or I've heard of,
like, I felt that
I watched this thing this year that no one else has seen because it's so obscure. Yeah. So
yeah, and I remember the last time I felt that strongly was like Pig.
I really liked Pig, and I don't think I'm trying to show off by liking Pig, but maybe.
No. But a lot of the people that were, you know, talking about, like, if you've paid attention to this, what fucking career? His student, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that director. It's like his first movies.
So, it's like, I don't think it's going to get in the top 10, man.
Here's the thing. I could see this going to number 11. And if you take out Barbie, which I didn't see, this hits top 10 for me. It feels like a top 10 movie this year.
Yeah.
For me.
Yeah.
But the combined list, I think, is going to just get bumped. So it ultimately doesn't really matter.
I could agree with... I mean, you could, I guess, I don't know if I buy it, but I can make an argument this is better than Creed. Even though I don't think it's better than Napoleon. Like, there's a couple, like, these weird... rock, scissors, paper type of things where it's like, I think Fast X is better, but it's not better than Napoleon, but it's currently higher than Napoleon. And so if you want to do
of these for sure. Cause I'm,
yeah, you're right.
I'm kind of,
we always go through
Asteroid
and do it
again. Might be too high. I think Dungeons and Dragons might be too low.
Cause here's the thing about Asteroid City. It's not even my favorite Wes Anderson thing this year.
Oh, like those shorts.
That
yeah.
short series collection of Roald Dahl on Netflix that came out late last year, I think is better than Asteroid City. And mm-hmm. I like Asteroid City.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Is there anything else to consider on this list? Or Renfield was kind of the cutoff, right? It.
Yeah, you really want to fuck around with any of those things. These are all worse movies.
All right, I do think we need to take a quick tour through the top 10 here.
Okay, let's go. The Holdovers, I mean, that's just going to win.
It was my favorite movie this year, without a doubt.
Yeah. I'm not saying it's the best.
Right.
Because that's something we do here at Bald Move.
But
the best doesn't
really
have to
good.
Win.
Like,
yeah.
It's a perfectly executed vision, I think.
Yes. Yes.
And you could maybe say the same thing about the next couple of movies, Killers of the Flower Moon and Oppenheimer, those may be perfect executed visions.
Man, and also I've seen some kind of like people, like filmmakers doing like YouTube videos on how much they made this movie feel like it was made in 1970s.
Yeah.
Like down to the copyright on the film is fudged, the film grain technique, the use of like smash zooms and like wipes and stuff that have gone out of favor and have seen as passe, and these are things that you all notice as you're watching it, but this was like a very finely crafted film and it looks amazing. And if you want to talk about like, oh well, the acting and all, like the acting, I'll put this movie's acting up against anything that I saw in the cinema. And if you want to say like, well, it's not like, okay, it's not as important a story as Killers of the Flower Moon and Oppenheimer and all that kind of stuff, I might grant you that, but it's also important to help people find joy and hope.
Yeah, I mean, it's a much more focused film, right? It focuses down on a single group of people here as opposed to our world, right?
Yeah.
Which Killers of the Flower Moon and Oppenheimer they're kind of the macro lens on humanity. This is a micro lens. And I think the micro is important.
The micro is really important. It's how we relate to each other. And this is not for nothing. This is instantly made that I'm going to watch this every one or two years around Christmas time.
Yeah.
Like it's going to join the Home Alone. It's going to join the Elf. It's going to join the Christmas Story as like, I probably won't get around to it every year because you can wear shit out. But like, this is on rotation, man.
I love how crude its comedy is at times. Like, yeah, there's some stuff that's borderline offensive in there, but also it's just got a crassness that I personally ascribe to. It just lined perfectly up with my sense of humor.
They dig Paul Giamatti's character in such a hole of likability in the first act of this movie. Like almost in the first, like just when you go in his bathroom and you just see like what's on his sink. And just a giant tube of Preparation H in the middle of it. And it's like this character is just so pitiful.
Yeah. And they continue to layer that on throughout the first, what, two-thirds of this movie, and it doesn't exactly do like an about face.
No, like but a redemption thing,
but it, like, when it happens, it feels right, and it happens very strongly.
All of the characters that are in a down position get a redemption of sorts, and it doesn't feel false. It feels very, like, you know, organic to these characters, and I love it. I love this movie.
Some people may call it, you know, a little saccharine in its conclusion, but I like that. I don't always like that. I will say that sometimes it's too over the top.
Mm-hmm.
But this movie hit just the right note with that.
I think it's just right. Yeah, it wasn't too sweet. It was a sweet ending, and it was an unexpected, because I was like, there's a couple points in this movie, I was like, oh, this is probably going to end in a downer. But they didn't.
The thing I loved about it is there's a sacrifice in there, too. It's not just everybody gets what they want, right? This guy sacrifices for the next generation of people who might feel a little less shit upon than he did.
And he grew that he, like, authentically feels like he is no longer stuck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he can go live a life
that
now.
He no longer buys into the narrative that was put on him. So, like, yeah, like, the amount of character development. This is, like, a brisk, like, 90-minute movie, too. It's great. If you missed it, I wouldn't say watch it now. I'd say wait till next November when you're starting feeling the Christmassy. And this is a great kickoff to your Christmas season.
Yeah, put it on your calendar.
Killers of the Flower Moon, I feel really good about that being number two. This is a film that I was looking forward to for probably, like, it and Dune are, like, the ones that I've, like, been following. And Oppenheimer. Yeah, there is a bunch of movies that I was really excited to see this year, and I'm gratified to see them so high up. I mean, Scorsese is just, I can't believe being in your 80s and making something this fucking awesome.
Yeah,
like, in every sense of the word, just an accomplishment. That scene of the guys working the fire fields. Just like, yeah, like I said, it's just like it's in hell. You're in hell, and at that point in the film, you feel like you're in hell with these women, and just the, like, Leo being willing to play this despicable an asshole. I guess that's nothing new. Like, he, like, this is no worse. Morally, certainly, than Candy's Ranch from
Django and Jane,
you know, but there's a layer of irony and edifice to that role that is completely stripped down.
This is
willing
more
to be hated. Yeah. Love that. I love Oppenheimer being in number three. I don't see a single false point yet, and I think I said a lot about Oppenheimer already. I will say that I don't see how you put Spider-Man above these three. But these three feel like a lock, and I wouldn't have them in any other position.
Part of me wants to make an artistic argument for Spider-Man going above Oppenheimer. But I don't know that I can... I don't know that it has the substance to get to number three here.
You're talking about Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse?
Uh-huh.
Making it over. I think you can make the argument.
It's a much more advanced film than Oppenheimer. I think, like, Oppenheimer visually is, it has its moments, but
it does have its
Spider-Man
signature.
Is a moment. Spider-Man is a start to finish. Spider-Man artistically, visually, is a masterpiece.
Yeah, it's the Trinity bomb scene, only it lasts the entire movie.
Yeah. For like 2.5 hours. It's a long movie, too.
It is, and it doesn't feel it. It feels like a nice 90-minute romp, too. But why am I unconvinced? Because I agree. Because
it's not
important. I agree with those.
Right. Nobody gives a shit if Spider-Man does cool stuff in visually cool ways. I get it.
Yeah.
Also, it's a part one. It's half a movie. I gotta discount it for that. I forgot that it ends on a cliffhanger.
True.
To be continued.
And it definitely, like, if it does, it feels much more like Empire Strikes Back than it does like, you know, Dead Reckoning or Dune, where it's like, oh, I felt like I got a whole movie. Like, it has an arc of, like, Miles started here and he ended here. He now has rejected this false narrative about him being this freak and this outlier, and now he's embracing his unique heritage and like racial, chronological, interdimensional, like, and is ready to, but also, you know, they almost shouldn't have taken us to the Prowler hideout. They should have let that be the setup because that is such a fucking cliffhanger.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, Luke and Leia, you know, standing on the outside of the galaxy with Lando and Chewie going to set up the stage to rescue Han is a pretty big cliffhanger, too. So, yeah.
Yeah. You wouldn't want to leave Han in Carbonite. That'd be pretty bad.
It certainly didn't feel like Dune 2, where that movie just slams to a halt in the middle of what it's doing. Mm-hmm. And part. Yeah. So.
Yeah. OK. Like I said, for that reason. Yeah. I think Oppenheimer stays where it is.
OK.
But man,
we've talked a lot about Spider-Verse.
Extraction's good where it is.
Yep. I don't think you could maybe make a argument for John Wick as like the old, like this is definitely the 2010s action film, defeating being better than the 1980s retread. But god damn, I fucking love Extraction. Extraction is like, the Extraction series is like if they took Commando and fixed all the problems we had with it.
Totally.
Better villains, better effects, more excited. Like, you know, this,
and then
like,
add a lot more hand-to-hand combat stuff too.
Yeah, because like, you know, there's definitely feats of strength that Arnold pulled off that were impressive, but like he's never been the best, like, you know, I think he got better as his career wore on, but in his Commando Predator stage, he is not the guy who's going to do an elaborate choreographed scene. It's just like he's just going to punch one guy and they're going to die. He's going to throw a knife. He's going to die. He's going to spray. Yeah. Whereas this, it's like it's the best of both worlds. It's the John Wick aesthetic with like the sensibilities of an 80s Arnold Sylvester film. It's pure joy for a guy like me.
And then there's John Wick where, I mean, that staircase scene alone is worth the price of admission.
And I thought they brought this series to a satisfying conclusion. Like it weighed, you know, to the extent that like did, you know, was John Wick even a character that could have a character arc? He did. Yeah,
I guess. Sure. Here's where the problem is Asteroid City. Cause I think Dungeons and Dragons deserves more credit. Like, you go in, tell me, okay, I tell you, hey, you can see the latest Wes Anderson movie, or you can see Dungeons & Dragons, the latest Dungeons & Dragons movie. Which one do you pick? Every time you pick Wes Anderson, right? Because there's a reputation there with Dungeons & Dragons that is negative. And this just blew me away. All of that negativity went out the window. I was super skeptical going in, too, because... You know, I'd seen the preview for the trailer for it, and I saw Chris Pine dancing around with the loot, and I'm like, okay, same joke over and over. Like, I guess the joke's okay, but it's not hilarious. It's not blowing me away. What they do after the part that you see in the trailer is 9 times as good. And I think half the reason I love this movie as much as I did is because they got me into the seat with like the talk around it. Everybody was saying this is actually a really good Dungeons & Dragons movie. They got me in the seat and then they blew me out of it. Like, because they didn't show everything. They didn't
exceeded
give away
expectations.
Yeah, they didn't give away the barn with the horse, whatever you say. I was kind of shocked by how good this movie was.
And the other thing that we haven't talked about, I know we did on the podcast, is the genius of this film was... It's exactly like playing a very fun campaign with your friends.
Yeah.
But you only get that extra information if you've played Dungeons & Dragons. Mm-hmm. They didn't have to make any cringe like meta narrative of fat, sweaty nerds with graph paper rolling dice.
Right.
It's like you got the like, oh, God, Chris Pine just rolled a negative, just rolled a natural one on that attempt to... you know, his charisma check, or the wizard just rolled a one on his attempt to do the concealment spell. And it's like it was the extra, it's like it's there, it's like this is exactly what it's like to play A good campaign with a good DM with your buddies where everyone's taken appropriately seriously and there's good stakes, but also hilarious shit has happening because it's the nature of this random kind of improv action comedy that you're doing. And I've never seen anything that is able to nail that experience, but it'd be completely seamless and visible to the general public who is just watching an adventure movie.
Yeah. I'm to the point with Dungeons and Dragons where I understand what a mimic is and why it's funny when that comes on screen, but knowing the exact nuances, they were pretty much lost on me, but it did not matter.
Yeah. And also, it's also D&D as fuck and like a really weird nerd. Like, you have gelatinous cubes in here. You've got like all this kind of like arch D&D nerd memes, but it's something that is accessible to the general public. I think we're saying that this should be higher than Asteroid City.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I think we're saying it might need to be higher than John Wick Chapter 4.
But that's where it stops for me. Extraction 2 is just too in my wheelhouse.
But you're saying it's better than John Wick Chapter 4.
I think so.
I think so, too.
Because I had expectations for John Wick Chapter 4 were met, but I had real actual expectations for it.
Mm-hmm.
Not so with Dungeons and Dragons.
I had modest expectations that it just vaulted over.
Oh yeah.
Okay. So are we cool with John Wick being better than Asteroid City? I'm still cool with that.
Yeah.
Here's where am I really saying that Barbie is not as good as Asteroid City? There's got so many similarities, especially with the artificiality of the look and feel of Barbie. And that's kind of like Wes Anderson when he gets out of bed in the morning. He starts in that aesthetic.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's a lot of there's a lot of good stuff in Barbie.
So I hear. I know Talitha really enjoyed it.
Yeah. Huh. It's not called the Producies, though. It's called the Baldies Gym.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I wish you'd seen Barbie so you could weigh in on this because...
I'm glad I have it. I don't want that responsibility.
It feels obscene to not have Barbie over Asteroid City. Because a lot of people put Barbie over Oppenheimer, which I think is nuts. But I can kind of see... All right, let's set that aside. Indiana Jones is fine in the top 10.
Wow, it did sneak into the top 10. All right, I like it.
It did sneak into top 10. I think we're there. Unless I get to see Barbie again between now and the award ceremony, I think we got our top 10, and more importantly, our top 5.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Nice. I feel good about that top 5.
Me too.